Some of us have drive, and some of us are beyond driven. Welcome to Beyond Driven Radio, bodybuilding's first stand. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this week's edition of Beyond Driven Radio. I'm your host, David Johnson, and my semi-silent partner in crime, Mr. Scott McNally. How you doing, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing good, Dave. I just got done training, ate some food. I'm ready to sit back, relax, and listen to the show. How about you, man?
I'm doing good, and unlike you and our special guest, Mr. Gary Turner, today, I haven't had a break in the eating. So I probably don't have quite the appreciation for the Thanksgiving feasting coming up that you both might, but either way, looking forward to some goodies tomorrow when we sit down to feast. And as I mentioned, you know, our special guest this week is Gary Turner. How you doing, Gary?
How's it going, guys?
Going good. So for anybody who's in the bodybuilding world, on social media, and actually still pays any attention left to actual competitions, you may have seen some of Gary Turner's epic posts and contests run over this past couple of months leading into this fall. Did two shows. I want you to tell us about those shows, Gary. But really what I wanted to have you on today to talk about was a topic that I'm just going to call the real grinder. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But this term, you know, being a grinder, it's become kind of hip, kind of popular in the bodybuilding world. I'll be honest, like, I don't think I'd ever heard it before Adam McVay started using the term. Though I'm sure it's been used in a lot of other contexts prior to that. Before we get into all that, Gary, why don't you give us the real quick 5-minute Cliff's Notes up to speed version of how you got rolling with all this stuff? Three major things I want to hear about here. Basically, how you got started with training, you know, and I'm sure it was a Sears Roebuck set and all that shit, but anything relevant with sports that you played and that got you involved in the sport in the first place, then how you segued into competing. And give, if you could, give us a real quick rundown of your competition history. And then finally, for anyone who doesn't know, you know, Gary, you've long been with the company Universal with Animal, correct?
That's correct.
And I'd like to just hear a little bit about what drew you to that company specifically and kind of how you got your foot in the door and what you do with the company, just to give some context to the listeners, who you are and where you're at.
All right, yeah. Basically, I played sports my whole life. Wasn't like, you know, the biggest guy, wasn't the smallest guy on the team. I played baseball since I was 5, up right through varsity in high school. Played football my whole life until sophomore year of high school. I actually was too small to play JV. I was just getting killed. I was about 5'1", 103 pounds then, so I was like definitely the smallest guy on the field. So I didn't go out for it my sophomore year past that. Wrestled for a little bit in middle school and then early high school. I love wrestling. I just, you know, I was decent. I just wasn't that passionate about it. Didn't lift a weight in high school. If you had sent me to the gym during gym class, I would have told you to fuck off, but I'd rather play, you know, sports or basketball or something like that. Right. Just wasn't an interest at all of mine in terms of that. So literally went away to college. I used to be a former, I still play guitar, but I was really into like the punk rock scene, like the post-hardcore metal scene in high school. And it carried into college up until I was about 18. Went to the University of Delaware, still that style, still not go to the gym, and realized that I'd gotten kind of out of shape eating, you know, the freshman 15, eating pizza and wings and burgers every night. Realized that maybe the girls here really don't like, you know, this like scene metalhead punk rocker guy. So I said, you know what, I'm gonna start going to the gym to get in shape. The first thing, right, I said is that I just want to flatten my stomach out. Abs is going to be too hard to get, and I just want to. So I started running 5 days a week, going to the gym 3 days a week, and you know, at the school gym. Didn't know a damn thing about anything. I remember my first day at the gym, of course, was chest. I dropped 95 pounds on my chest on the second rep. Was totally embarrassed that I was like the only guy in the gym that couldn't do at least a plate on the side.
Right.
And I had about a million people, including my family, that said, abs are 2 weeks, you'll quit. you know, they'll you'll give it up after 2 weeks, and you know, here we are 12 years later.
Why did they think that? Why did they say that about you? Did they not know who you were at the time, or did you change?
I changed. I used to start gym regimens to play, to, you know, get in the off season for sports, and would literally say, fuck this shit, and I hate this, and I would, and I just like wouldn't go. I if you sent me to the YMCA, or you told me I had to run on the street for wrestling or football to get my endurance up, I would say, this is, I hated doing it. I hated, you know, I was good naturally at the sports. I was good playing the sports, but in terms of like the actual road work and training that went behind it, I half-assed it. And we'll get more into this later about when this change happened. The nobody's watching me, I'm still doing all the work that is required of me type thing. It was like a switch almost. But back right. in high school, I wasn't, so everyone assumed that I was gonna, you know, drop out of the whole gym regimen. Okay. Started seeing some results when I came home from school. Everybody, hey, look, you look a little more buff. And literally that, the compliment that I got every 6 months going back and forth from home to school was my driving factor. I said, when I was at school, when I came home, I wanted the home people to see, notice the results. And when I went home, when I went back to school, I wanted them to see the results. So those kind of, the compliments really at that point drove me to keep going. And, you know, to try, you know, to impress people. I knew that people were seeing changes. And then before you know it, I was like the gym guy on campus. It's nothing compared to what it is now, but I was like, an early stages men's physique guy, if you will. Yeah. I cared only about being ripped. I barely ate any carbs. I ate healthy all the time. I was afraid of eating cheat meals, just because I thought that one cheat meal would get me fat. I had no guidance, by the way.
Right.
There was no coaching, no thoughts, anything like that. It wasn't anywhere as big as it was today, and I, you know, it's it was just kind of like, you know, eating healthy. I was partying a lot, and you know, I always kind of tell kids in college nowadays that, you know, that really want to hardcore compete, I'm like, if that's what you want to do, that's fine, but I would not recommend being in college and competing. You're going to miss out on 4 years of your life that are epic years, especially if you're a guy who likes to go out. You know, and I get it. You got to be disciplined for the sport. Maybe you should wait until after, rather than carrying Tupperware around campus and really just, to me, fucking up a very developmental stage of your life so that after graduation, you could be a real human being and not like be a 30-year-old adolescent drunk at a bar every weekend. So that's how I got into the training in college. It was like from 18. So it was February 2006. Was the first day that I went to the gym. I remember going to GNC, dropping $150 even before I ever went to the gym. I had to come out with Tech and Nitro Tech and whatever the hell pre-workout.
All sorts of tacks. All sorts of muscle tech garbage.
About $175 for those three things. I didn't know a fucking damn thing about ordering off the internet or anything like that. I was your perfect candidate to go into GNC and get ripped off.
Yeah.
And then... So training, of course, happened. 2009 came around. I graduated from college. There was a hardcore gym in my town in Edison, New Jersey, called the Pollen Gym. I was going there in my off time. It's, you know, a lot of bodybuilders there. A lot of New Jersey bodybuilders came out. And I walked in one day after graduation, and it was a teen bodybuilder. You could tell that he was very advanced. He was getting ready for a show. And I don't know if anybody's familiar with, you know, with anybody from, you know, locally from the scene, but it was Frank Manorino, who's, you know, one of my best friends now in current day. He was getting ready for a team show, and he walked up to me and he said, you know, you should do a bodybuilding show. And I said, fuck that shit. And the real reason that I didn't want to do it, I was apprehensive, I had a girlfriend of 5 years from high school that absolutely hated the idea of competitive bodybuilding. She wasn't even happy about the whole gym scene, but she put up with that. But competitive bodybuilding was completely out.
Why?
She thought it was vain.
Okay.
Very arrogant, very into yourself. Even when I tried to explain to her that these guys work hard, you should come to a show, you know, see what it's like, maybe your opinion will change. Not happening. So So I said, I put the competition off. And I told Frank, I was like, it's not for me, man. It's not for me. And I knew that it was. I was just lying to myself. So finally, I mustered up the courage to say, you know what? I'm going to fucking do it. I'm going to do it in 2010. And she ended up asking me one more time. I said, yeah, I'm getting ready for a show in 2010. She said, well, we're not going to be able to have a date. And that was the end of it. 5 years down the drain to pursue the dream. The dream at that point was just getting on stage. It wasn't any kind of, like nowadays, every kid that's getting ready for the first show is pro card bound and shit like that. That wasn't even, I didn't even know what a pro card was at that time. So we got ready for that. A few shows happened, had some, decent success. At some local level shows, even at that point, I had placed 10th. Junior Nationals was my first national level show in 2013. Shortly before that, while I was in prep, was saw a post by Eric Schwartz. And if anyone's familiar with Eric Schwartz, he's the brand manager for Universal Nutrition. They were looking for customer service guys. It was in New Brunswick, New Jersey, which is about 20 minutes from my house in Edison. Right. At the time, I was working just part-time jobs, multiple part-time jobs, piecing together the check. So I didn't have a full-time job, no benefits. I was still young enough to be under my parents at the time. I was 24. That was in 2013. And went in for the interview. I guess it was what they were looking for. They hired me, and I've been there ever since. So over there, primarily customer service. So if you call in and you have a question about a product or an order or something like that, I'm one of two people who are going to get your call. Beyond that, I'm also a copywriter for all the social media. So 99% of the social media posts that you see go out on any kind of Instagram or Facebook probably got written by me in my own words.
And, well, that would explain why your own social media game is so polished, because basically you're a professional social media guy, which is kind of ironic given the topic at hand and the status that's given nowadays. But at the same time, for anyone that knows animals, orientation, I think it's a match made in heaven.
Exactly, and that's the real reason. I'm a decent writer, and I just found a niche with animal. Based on their type of marketing, that makes it very easy. I almost feel that, with their hardcore speaking and gritty gym talk, I'm not acting when I write for them. I'm literally writing as Gary Turner.
Right,
so
I know.
It just happens that coincides with it.
Right.
And, if it was like, if I was a professional copywriter, say, for Microsoft, I would have a lot bigger challenge.
Well, I was going to say, their marketing. Knowing what you know now, could you see yourself working with any other supplement company out there?
No, and the reason why is I think that a lot of the other supplement companies, for lack of better words, are soft.
Agreed.
I think that nowadays most supplement companies, besides a few, are very techie oriented.
Right.
Your muscle techs, your CelluCores, your BSNs. I walk by these booths. I'm at every single major trade show, and I'm looking at them. I'm like, I can't see myself back there.
No.
It would just look odd, everything's so digital and high tech and with fancy glass cases and stuff like that. It's not my attitude. I mean, I'm a very outgoing person, but in terms of gym life, I identify with the animal ads, as do many other people, but I sitting in the darkness, with your hood up and, the gym is the only world type mindset. That's kind of how I identify with it. So when the other companies, I would have trouble. I mean, I could work for them, but it would just be a very generic role. It would just be, a sales rep. There wouldn't be any unique.
Knowing that you had more of that punk rock background, which I didn't know, and Scott, you being into hard rock, heavy metal, stuff like that, it kind of all adds up. It has all that do-it-yourself, old school, black and gray, black and white ethos, where it's gritty and it's not polished and flashy and modern, that's a lot of people that are faithful to Universal are so for that reason. Like, I still use a lot of animal products, and you know, everything that Evan went through with Prime Nutrition, coming back to Universal, like, of all the companies out there, I think it's pretty safe to say if you're going to pick out one supplement company that really seems to have a whole lot of integrity and a very clear concept of their mission and what they're after, I think it's safe to say that's Universal. So for somebody with that orientation, it's kind of a no-brainer. And it sounds like you're really lucky to get your foot in the door there.
It was definitely like a step in shit type of luck type thing. We still laugh about it because me and Eric, we bicker back and forth, and he goes, and I'm like, you're responsible for all this. You're responsible for me even being here. You're the one who brought me in. He goes, I know. I regret it every day. I see his jokes around. But it's a good atmosphere. You know, working there, no one even eats on their lunch breaks because we eat throughout the day.
Right.
It's a good way to have an office job that coincides hand-in-hand with bodybuilding. So everything we're doing, obviously, has to do with supplements, you know, indirectly with the bodybuilding and MTC scene. And, you know, they understand better than other companies what it's like to be a bodybuilder and what we're going through. You know, where I was, you know, even like 2 weeks ago before my show, like I was majorly fucked up in the office. And it was like, I was just trying to hold it together. Certain days I was like, I got to go home. And I took, you know, some paid time off. But, you know, it was other companies might not be down with that.
Right. All right, so let's jump right into the meat and potatoes then. You know, it's become really hip in our industry to talk about being a grinder. It's probably a matter of, you know, 2-3 years before that itself becomes a term of endearment that people are chasing, even though they're not grinders. Gary, to you, what is it to be a grinder, and what is the opposite of a grinder? What does it even mean? Give us your basic definition or thoughts on the subject.
To me, a grinder is somebody who is, first and foremost, completely disciplined and prioritizes the task at hand. That's the base of it. So obviously we're bodybuilding, we're prepping for contests. There are no nonsense. This contest prep is their first and foremost priority before anything that comes for it. A grinder is a guy that if they're 1 ounce short of their chicken and they have no more left in the fridge, they have to go to the food store and get the more chicken to fill that 1 ounce. It's just a matter of covering all bases, leave no stone unturned. And then the second part, to me, is being, I don't want to say genetically flawed. It's, you know, if you have abysmal genetics, you're not going to be any good at bodybuilding. But I'm talking about guys who have moderate to decent genetics, maybe not, you know, the prettiest shape,
right,
but, you know, decent enough genetics, they can add a significant amount of muscle, they can get conditioned and stuff like that, but not completely still Heath gifted, or some of these guys that, you know, you see, you know, for lack of better words, you can see, you know, the black kid walking on the road, he's eating french fries his whole life, hasn't been to the gym once, and he's got perfect shoulder taps, perfect abs, you know, Michael Lockett, before you know it, I watch him train, and I'm like, this guy's not doing anything right, and he constantly stays shreddy, he has perfect shape. That is not a grinder. But, you know, like I said, a grinder is somebody who's kind of has the odds stacked against him, but still will outwork somebody and persevere, especially when shit gets tough. I mean, I was, from the beginning, I've always had this mindset of drilled into my brain that when people go into contest prep, they don't mess up. They do all their cardio, they do all their training, and they eat all their meals, and they don't eat anything else. That was just how I was brought up. And then I got kind of deeper into the industry, and I'm like, and people said, man, you're naive. Pros fuck up on their diet, they switch shit out. I'm like, dude, that weirded me out. Like, I didn't even, like, think that. And I guess that naivety, or naivety, I don't even know what the fuck the word is. It's just not how I was taught to do it. And for me, up until this day, I've done 6 preps since 2010. I've missed one meal in that prep, and that was in 2012, at 15 weeks out. I fell asleep early, and they slept through the night. And I didn't eat my last meal. That was the only meal I've ever missed in a contest prep, but training or cardio, I've never missed. And that, to me, is, you know, when you're feeling like dog shit, you know, you just have to keep going. So you make a grinder somebody, in lack of better words, is somebody who makes up for their faulty genetics with hard work, and then he rises above.
Well, I think that's a really good working definition. You're onto something there, because it's funny. Long before I started hearing this word thrown around the bodybuilding world, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Rounders with Matt Damon about playing poker.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a great, great movie. Anyone that hasn't seen it that's listening, go check it out. But, you know, Matt Damon, he's a great poker player, and he decides he's going to try to make his run and make it big, you know, and go to Vegas and whatever, and gets busted, obviously. Sorry if I'm ruining the movie. Tough shit. It's been out for 20 years. If you haven't seen it, your fault. but they talk about the one guy, Kanish, that he's buddies with, and how Kanish is a grinder. And what does he mean by that? He means essentially the dude isn't looking for a quick fix. He's not looking for that miracle hand that so many people in our world seem to be looking for, that's just going to catapult them to superstardom and wealth and all this great shit without the requisite steps in between. Right. So Kanish, in the movie, he kind of knew, like, he just had to go in and grind it out every fucking day like a regular person and play hands of poker, just like you would pick up the garbage if you're a garbage truck driver, and just like you train your clients if you're a personal trainer, you know. And again, when you're talking about that, you know, the game of poker, I don't think the concept of genetics factors in, obviously. But you can talk about, you know, the people that have the mentality where they're hoping to hit big with minimal effort. You know, they have that hope and that dream. Versus the people that kind of accept the cold, hard reality that that's not how shit works for the most part. Like, you just need to put in your time and get in that extra ounce of chicken, whether you want to or not. So I totally think that, you know, you're onto something with that. Let me ask you, who would you say, off the top of your head, represent really good examples of that in professional bodybuilding these days, or say in the past, you know, 20, 30 years? And who are your personal inspirations in the sport, if you have any?
I would say the one that comes right to mind would be John Meadows. And I know that you knew I was going to say that.
Sure.
John's been competing, I think, since 1987?
Yeah.
Or something like that. He's been competing since he was like 16 years old. You know, back when MPC cards were about $30. And John's also been stepped through each level there was. I mean, the guy didn't compete at the national level, I don't think, until a decade into competing. Nowadays, some of these guys are second show they're doing it. They might not be doing well, but that's another story. But John, you could tell from John's physique, and anybody that knows John, besides the fact that he's meticulous in everything he does, he works extremely hard, and he's very, very knowledgeable. He taught himself to do that over the years. But John's physique is not that blessed. It's cool to look at. He's gnarly. He gets very, very grainy. He's very, he's very conditioned. But like I said, he is not these top 10 Olympians. But, you know, regardless, they're both professional status. It's not the same look. But John has made something. John made a dollar out of 75 cents, basically.
Right.
Whereas if he gave up in, say, 1997, when probably everyone said, John, your shape's not that good. You know, you're going against Don Long. You're going against Chris Cormier. Those guys, you know, Paul DeMeo. These guys are all genetic, you know, wonders. That they're perfectly shaped. They compete at nationals maybe 2-3 times, and then they turn pro. And, if he gave up at that point, we would have never known who John Meadows was nowadays. Now, you know, the guy basically has, besides the successful business that he has, it's just the look that he gives and the no-nonsense attitude. And, you know, grinder doesn't mean that you're a rude person or a aggressive person, because John is not aggressive, you know, outside of the gym. He's aggressive when he trains.
Sure.
It's just the act of chipping away for years and years and years, knowing that something good's going to happen, and you're just not Phil Heath. It's not going to be given to you. There's a reason why they call him the Gift.
Sure.
It was great, but Phil Heath didn't have a lot of
adversity.
He didn't have to say, I don't know if this is for me. I don't know if I can do this. It came pretty quick and pretty evident to him.
Sorry, go ahead.
John probably had a lot of talks in his head over the years on, I don't know if this is worth it. Am I wasting my money? Am I killing my body? Am I killing my joints all for nothing? And to see the guy And not to mention, how many times has he gotten second place at pro qualifiers?
Oh, God.
And accepted it and lost. He lost with grace. Didn't
yes.
throw chairs, didn't throw tantrums, didn't make excuses.
Hmm.
And when and literally, I mean, even the time that John Anderson screwed him over because he wouldn't give up the pro card in the one Masters category, and John Meadows would have been got his pro card that show.
Right.
I almost threw I threw a tantrum that weekend from home when I heard that.
Yeah, well, you know what, Gary, sometimes karma's a bitch, because I'm pretty sure I just read 8,000 opinions making fun of Johnny Anderson's synthalled up traps and shoulders from this past weekend.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, you know, there's that. I guess when you're not a fucking grinder, anything goes.
Right. But I was the happiest person when John finally turned pro at Team Universe. I think it was in 2015. You know, and just seeing that is a inspiration to me that maybe one day I would find myself in the winner's circle. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going to be listening to this that are like, this guy's dreaming. This guy's not, has no shot. He shouldn't even be thinking of it. Listen, I've heard every excuse. Adam McVay, who's my buddy, has told me on about 100 different occasions that I will never be a pro bodybuilder. If it ever happens, he'll be the first person that his words will be eaten. But I disregard that kind of talk. I'll nod my head with you just so you shut up. But in my head, I'm like, I gotta go to the gym. I said, that's not the plans I have.
Gary, honestly, don't you think you do better having those people in your life? Like, don't you think you'd be yes. less of who you are if those people weren't there giving you the shit they are?
Completely and absolutely. It gives me a chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
I've had that ever since pretty much the beginning from when it could be, there's a lot of chips on my shoulders. For the longest time, I've walked through bodybuilding shows on people's pay no mind list. You know, I thought I was good, and then I wasn't. I realized real quickly that nobody gave a fuck about my physique or anything like that. They gave a fuck about everyone else's.
Right.
And that put a chip on my shoulder that say, one day I'm going to show these motherfuckers.
Right.
And that put me back in the gym. When people say that I can't do something, you know, like I said, Adam says it just because, you know, that's Adam. We all know him. And many people have said, I've gotten private messages from people saying, you know, you give up now. You're not fucking Jay Cutler. So he said the Jay Cutler haircut. You're not fucking Jay Cutler. You're not going to be shit in this sport. Guess what? Those guys like my pictures now.
Yeah.
I post them on Instagram and shit. And I called them out. I said, it's funny. 2 years ago, you told me to quit. And they said, honestly, I take back every word I said. I said, it's funny. It's funny how shit happens.
That negativity
people could run away from. And, you know, you don't. It depends what kind of person you are. For me, it fuels me.
It's funny that you say that because you're kind of considered an aggressive dude, but here you are, like, a couple years after the fact, you're inspiring these people that basically talk shit on you. And who knows, maybe they're actually, you know, making better lives for themselves now, seeing, hey, it is possible if you just put in the work.
Yeah, well, listen, there's more people with not perfect genetics to bodybuild than there are people with perfect genetics to bodybuild. There might be a lot more. We just don't see them on stage. But if I could show people that, listen, man, if you work hard and not fuck around on your diet and not fuck around with your training, some good shit will happen to you. Maybe we'll see, you know, some guys come in better. We'll see guys stick with the sport a little bit longer. We, you know, rather than give up and, you know, reach people that way. I mean, like I said, I learned probably within the last 2 years that I'm not going to reach people having the best physique in the world. That sort of incorporation of the bodybuilding community is a little bit out of touch, and I've accepted that. But this seems to be a better niche for me because it's something that I control. And I could show everyone through the results that they see, you know, whether pictures or on stage or something like that. So that's kind of the target where I've been attacking. But, yeah.
Well, so let me ask you this. You mentioned Jay Cutler, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Jay is one of your all-time top bodybuilders, huge inspiration for you.
Sure.
I think, you know, most people wouldn't naturally think of Cutler as a grinder. I mean, here's a dude, genetic phenom, very young age, going to team nationals, you know, almost winning the whole thing, only lost to Branch Warren, goes to the Olympia, almost wins the whole thing his first year out. Like, everyone out of the gate looked at Cutler and said, this guy is going the distance. No one questioned him. You know, he had everything behind him in terms of support. The only problem is he had one thing in front of him, Ronnie fucking Coleman. All right. And all the support in the world doesn't necessarily topple Ronnie Coleman. Do you think of Jay Cutler as a grinder? I mean, even though it's not traditional, it's not conventional, same time, like, there's a dude who, you know, never missed a meal. He never missed a set. Like, he technically fits that same description.
You're right. He is, and he's not the first person that comes to mind, but he is definitely falls in that category. To be honest with you, I became a fan of Jay Cutler for his look. And that was before I even thought of myself as a grinder or, you know, or identified with that. But I like Jay Cutler's look. And then I like his personality. But you're right, though. When Jay was competing, Jay was all business. He never missed a meal. He had everything with him as he traveled. He treated it like a business. But he also, from my understanding, like, Jay wouldn't do guest posings inside 8 weeks of the show. He needed to stay home. He needed to make sure his meals were timed and perfect order. No mishaps, no, you know, thought processes elsewhere. It was gym, eating, and training, and cardio. And he took it very seriously. That was his first priority. So Jay was very meticulous in what he did as well. Granted, I wouldn't consider him the grinder in the sense that Jay was genetically faulty or anything like that. People say, oh, he had a wide waist and yada, yada, yada. If there was one of the perfectly constructed bodybuilders' bodies, Jay Cutler's up there. So
yeah,
I don't want to hear that.
Let me ask you this, though. Without that grinder mentality, do you think he would have ever been Mr. Olympia, given what was in front of him?
No. And that's where the grinder mentality comes back in. We're talking about the upper echelon here. So as good as genetically as Jay was, he was going against Ronnie Coleman, who is arguably the hardest worker and genetically gifted bodybuilder of all time.
Right.
The man every year came back bigger. I think in 2003, Ronnie Coleman weighed in at 293 pounds or something. So what does Jay Cutler have to do that? He has to, one, figure out a way to add an exorbitant amount of size to his already 255-pound stage weight, which is enormous.
Right.
For anybody who doesn't really understand, that's huge. Jay's only 5'9". So now he's got to figure out a way to catch Ronnie. He's got to figure out a way to get on stage at 275 pounds. There's only a few ways to do that, and it's not force feeding. Jay definitely had to amp the drugs up a bit, man, for that.
Sure.
He speaks in retrospect that he did not want to look that way.
Right.
He did not want to be 279 pounds on stage or whatever he was, 275 at the 2006 Olympia. But he did what he had to do because he was chasing a dream. And that's part of being a grinder, is you have to do what you have to do, what's expected of you to chase your dream. I have a tattooed on my arm, no excuses, do the work. Basically you do whatever you can by all means possible. And God knows what Jay had to do to be able to do that, but it worked out for him. And, you know, that's why Jay is who he is. Jay is probably the fan base that he has now because he took down Ronnie Coleman, and then he regained the title after losing it, even though he kind of gave that away to Dexter Jackson in 2008. that's why he has the fan base that he has. Well, I would consider him a grinder. He's just not the first person, just because it's hard to call the upper echelon like that a grinder because they're still very gifted. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, and, you know, me personally, I was a huge Ronnie fan. So I went out to the Olympia in 05 and saw everybody booing Ronnie and cheering for Jay. And I wasn't a huge fan of Jay's physique. But the funny thing is, over time, I earned a respect for the guy that I arguably don't have for Ronnie or anybody else. Just that man had no quit in him. Like, even that one Olympia where he got second for, the third time, and he's backstage, like, shaking his head, saying, I'm bigger and I'm leaner and I don't know what they want from me. And he starts melting down for like 10 seconds, maybe. And then he catches himself and he just drops his head and he says, well, I'll catch him next year. Like, his unshakable faith in himself and what he had to do was just really incredible. I can't even, that mentality to take fourth four times in a row, knowing everything you put into it, and still come back and challenge. Like, that's nuts, man. Most people would have quit long before that. And the funny thing, you're talking about what Jay had to do with supplements. What really stood out to me, Gary, like, do you remember the DVD he put out, Ripped to Shreds, back in the day for his Arnold win, one of his Arnold wins?
Yeah.
I owned that, and I remember popping it in because I was pretty early in my bodybuilding years, and Here's Jay waking up in the middle of the night to go put in a third cardio session at 2 a.m., like setting an alarm clock just to wake up and do a midnight cardio session. And I remember thinking, like, are you just purposely trying to make your life as hard as it has to be? Like, there has to be a more efficient way to get that done, you know? And it almost seemed like a chip he put on his own shoulder to make himself kind of miserable, knowing that it would put him in the headspace needed to just go to war, you know, every single day.
Man, you said it perfectly there. And there are times I identify with that mindset where to be, if you are trying to catch a goal and you're somebody who needs to make up, you know, some lost ground, you know, for what it was, for the goal you're chasing, you need to not be realistic. I see many realistic bodybuilders out there that say, well, I was standing on my feet all day, so I'll have a little bit extra rice. Well, that's, granted, it probably won't, it's realistic to say it probably won't affect you, but you don't do it because it's not on your diet. To do cardio at 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah, you probably get it done another time, but if you make it hard for yourself, it's almost like you put yourself in a different dimension. You put yourself over the edge. And that's what it takes to, you know, condition that I like, that I know I brought this past year. Inconvenience your life is basically what I say. If I go to the gym and I'm doing cardio at 6 a.m. is when I schedule it, and I find myself standing up too easy at 6 a.m. I wake up just before the alarm clock and it's too easy getting to the gym, then I go at 5:30. Even though I don't have anything to do, I go at 5:30. And then 5. And then I do that just to kind of inconvenience my life a little bit more, just to keep me on my toes a bit more. To me, when you, like, from the outside looking in, that's fucked up. But, like, not a lot of people can do that. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I should get my cardio done post-workout. It's the same thing. No, it's fucking not. And even if it's scientifically it says it, fuck that. I mean, you're putting it post-workout because it's making your life easier. You only have to go to the gym once during the day.
Right.
And I learned that mindset working with Matt Porter when he made me do triple-hit cardio sessions. Every day, so 3 HIIT cardio sessions a day with the workout separate from it. Could I have put one of those at the end of the workout? Sure. I'm sure it wouldn't have made a difference, but that's not what I was told, and that's not what would have inconvenienced life. So I went to the gym 4 times a day from 4 weeks out, and I did, you know, I did fasted, lunchtime, and then 10 o'clock at night, and I did a training session about 5:30. That's all the while my wife was 9 months pregnant, and she gave birth at 6 weeks out, and I still did all that cardio running in and out of the delivery room. And that's my own horn here. So for anybody who's listening, I'm not saying my own horn here. I'm just saying that you have to get a bit crazy with it if you're not Dexter Jackson.
Yeah.
Dexter Jackson doesn't do shit. A lot of other guys don't do this shit. And a lot of other guys that should be doing this shit don't do it and they lose. So that's I'm saying that, like, you got to really make yourself uncomfortable. And if you're too comfortable, you're probably not going to win. And I'm pretty sure it was a Shelby Starnes quote or Eric Fankhauser, I think, said, if you're feeling good during your prep, you're probably not going to win.
Right. Well, it's kind of what you said about, you know, a few minutes back. Again, not to be controversial, but you see someone walking down the street that has great cap delts or great abs, you know, whether they're black person, white person, whatever, while eating junk food. You know, I've known so many people like that over the years as a trainer where you say, hey, have you ever thought about competing or whatever? And individuals that can achieve that with minimal effort usually will look at you and say, why the fuck would I want to not eat pizza and not drink beer when I can eat pizza and drink beer and look like this anyways? Like, why would I do it? Meaning, I think people tend to forget, if you want something to matter, it has to require effort, all right? Something isn't going to matter to you that takes no effort. And a lot of time, the more effort you have to pour into something, the more meaningful it's going to be to you. So if you want that prep to mean everything, you got to make it uncomfortable. And you know, it's interesting to hear that you purposely challenge yourself to make it even more uncomfortable and go out of your way to chase that almost. So this is a good spot. You know, you're talking a little bit about working with Matt Porter. I've had the pleasure of working with Matt myself. I think you might take the cake as the ideal MPA client. Why don't you fill us in a little bit these last couple of years working with Matt? You mentioned to me there's some pretty big differences between your preps and those of other top level amateurs. You know, you already mentioned the three HIIT cardio sessions. Give us the nitty gritty for all, you know, the younger generation listeners. What do you get for cheat meals? What do you get for refeeds? What do you get for days off? How many cardio days do you get off per week? Go into all of the murder that you have to go through to get on that stage at your best.
Yeah, so I started working with Matt for the 2015 Junior USA. So I started with him in December 1st of 2014. I met him at the Olympia. Well, I talked to him online, but I met him in person at the Olympia 2014. I was about 285 pounds of sloppy bullshit perma bulk meds. That mindset was put on me like by an old school, you know, the person who was helping me. We had the old school Lee Priest, you know, Dorian Yates. You pack it on and then you take it off during prep. And for anybody who doesn't know Matt Porter, Matt's a conditioning expert. His guys come in shredded. And I said, well, I need to come in shredded. So this guy seems to be, you know, real in line for me. Who also know Matt. Matt doesn't put up with the fucking off-season bullshit heavy-duty weight, you know, 30% body fat or anything like that. So he looked at me and goes, you're not going to be able to be like this. We went into prep. I remember him telling somebody, I don't know if it was you, David, but it was somebody. He told somebody when I signed up, he said, I don't know what this kid expects me to do. I'm not a magician.
I think so, that's my exact line that you've heard me drop numerous times.
He had doubts in himself. He didn't know how I was going to work. He just knew that I had a gigantic gut. I was very out of shape, and there was a lot of work to do. And so we had 24 weeks to get ready for the Junior USA. So it was, you know, it was a pretty normal time. I hadn't had a cheat meal from the beginning of that prep all the way probably until, I would say 6 weeks out. So it was a very, very long time that I went before I got a refeed. Matt, I've never gotten an actual cheat meal from Matt where it was like, Gary, go get what you want. That never happened, even when I was shredded.
You never got the burger and fries?
Between a show, but he never gave me a burger and fries, and I'm talking about even when I was like, nasty shit. He's always been very, very conservative and a little bit timid with me, knowing that I'm the kind of guy who can store fat if I go off the deep end. He also knows that I'm absolutely nuts right now, so whatever he tells me to eat, I'm going to do it. So he'll tell me exactly what he wants. But the type of refeeds we had for, it was that prep and then this last prep, that prep and then 2016 prep, was a typical Matt Porter refeeds, which was like a Subway sub. There was pasta, bagels, sushi. When I say sushi, he only allows you to get the fish and rice, not the tempura, the good stuff, with all the sauces on it. Baked glaze. You know, if Matt's refeeds are all low fat, high carb, they're usually like, you know, like Chipotle or something like that, but he dictates what you can get because he's mapped it all out. And he waits till the right time. Matt's a little bit backwards from the kind of coaches that I worked with, whereas those coaches I worked with, they give you cheat meals far out of the show, and then the cheat meals would go away. Matt doesn't give you shit while you're eating a lot early in the prep, and as you get leaner and as you flatten out, then you might get some more goodies. So the faster that you get in shape with Matt, the quicker that you can get, you know, some different kind of food added. You know, slower, the more that you're just going to stay on diet and keep grinding it out. So the first two preps were pretty the same. You know, we had the refeeds on Saturday after legs, after, you know, when we were close to the show. Conditioning was, and I could tell in Matt's tone, we did as best we can with what I had. And what that means was, the way I interpreted was that Matt was happy with how I looked. But he didn't think of me as a true contender for anything. He just was like, let's get the best Gary can be kind of deal. He didn't look at me as a threat. And I said, you know, that can't happen. I am a threat. I believe myself I'm a threat. I don't care what anybody else says about me. So I came back. I added the necessary muscle on this past off season. Came back this season. I was about 245 and pretty lean going into the Eastern USA's this year. But this prep was a bit different. A couple different foods were used the whole time, but I got no refeeds this entire time, even though I was pretty shredded at like 6 weeks out. And the only refeeds we had were like high carb days, which were like a 600 gram with like two cups of rice at each meal type thing with some rice cakes, you know, with low protein chicken or something like that. So there was no Chipotle. I didn't have any Chipotle, no Subway, no McDonald's ice cream that Matt likes to send you for. It was just different. And the whole time I'm saying, man, I don't get it. I look great. I don't know why I'm not getting these things. And then I realized, I'm like, those cheat meals that he was giving me, those refeeds that he's given me in the past, those weren't rewards. Those were him trying to change something in my metabolism to ramp me up. This past time, every check-in was smooth. Every check-in was like, all right, Gary, you're right on point. All right, man, you're doing great. Keep it the same. So he felt the need to not change it. So in reality, I was doing better as a bodybuilder, but I was still eating the same food the whole time. So I ate the same food up until pretty much the day before the show when I carved up a little bit for the show. It was very straightforward. It was very boring. Cardio got cut out for about 2 weeks, and then the rest of it was ramping it up because he was trying to grind my glutes out, and we did. So right when you think that Matt's the kind of coach that right when you think he's going to take it easy on you, he will intensify the workload. And, you know, that's what you need. It's the kind of – it works well with me because I do whatever you ask me to do. So when Matt gets tough with me, he knows that I'm going to do it. Other clients, they might fold. They might tell him to fuck off. They might drop out of the prep. You know, he might have to handle them and hold their hand a little bit more. With him, he tells me what he wants, and he gets it, and it gets done. That's it. So that's pretty much the – thing with Matt. There's no magic food with him. His clients, they come out shredded, but it's just he just works you basically.
Yeah. Well, I think that's exactly what a lot of people need to hear, especially anyone that's curious how the man does it. You know, as Matt likes to say, nothing fancy, just put in the work and getting the shit done. Gary, that's a really good spot. We're going to take a really quick commercial break, and we'll be right back after these messages to finish up with Gary Turner, the real grinder.
Team Warrior Within, founded by David and Nikki Johnston. More than 14 years experience as full-time trainers and coaches. Through their online coaching service, they can help anybody who has a passion to make progress. From everyday people just looking to lose weight, build muscle, trim up, to contest prep for beginners, all the way to working with top-level IFBB pros. 100% month-to-month rates, no contracts. Check out the website, teamwarriorwithin.com, and visit Facebook, Team Warrior Within.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with Gary Turner, the real grinder. Gary, I want to talk a little bit about the reality of being a grinder. You know, you had mentioned maybe getting that pro card one day. The competition scene is changing so rapidly right now. It seems almost day to day with all the shit going on with the IFBB split and all that. But within, you know, the tradition of IFBB Pro, are you in fact hoping to one day go pro? And if you get there, do you think you have any chance realistically? And again, I know you don't like to be realistic, so I'll leave that up to you. But do you think you have any chance of being a competitive pro?
To answer your question about going pro, yes, that to me right now, I do believe that I will eventually obtain a pro card. And every year, that possibility becomes more and more of a reality to me as I see the changes. Because there are times every year I surprise even myself with the changes that are made, and in the progression that I'm making. But you know, in the past, to sit here and say I'm going to turn pro, people say yeah, you're dreaming, because they words don't mean anything. They don't mean anything to those people. You have to show them, and then you show up your show and you look twice at what you looked like the time before. It you get a few steps closer, and then you double that the next time, and so on and so forth until you're there. I believe that I will, and the reason why I believe that as I continue to add muscle, I think that my structural flaws will disintegrate a little bit and not be as evident. I believe that my conditioning can only go up from here, and I believe it was pretty noticeable this past year. So I believe that I don't know what show it's going to be, and it would definitely be a very tough challenge, but that's, I definitely think it's a possibility. It's definitely what I'm going for as a goal. I spoke with Eric Ramirez, you know, Eric turned pro, I think, in 2014 North Americans. He helped me backstage at both shows. And Eric's known for his ridiculous conditioning. He beat Brad Rowe that show, I believe. And Eric is not the prettiest structure, but he was so shredded that he just found himself in the winner's circle. And he said to me, he said, listen, man, every year you improve, every year you look better, and every year you look more like a real bodybuilder. Your conditioning is ridiculous every year, and it's getting better. He goes, you can find yourself in a position that if some of these genetically elite guys are slip, you know, use Benny Brantley, for example. Benny Brantley has one of the prettiest physiques. Can't come in shape. Always about 10, 20% off. He's one of those guys, if he ever did come in shape, he'd kill everybody, but he never does. Brandon Ray, same thing. He said, if you catch these guys slipping in the proper lineup, you could find yourself winning it. That, and he's right. And to hear him say that was just such a motivating factor that it was even a consideration. Because like any time I ever mentioned, everybody just basically told me to shut the fuck up. So, you know, to even be considered amongst that, Kevin Jordan wrote on my picture that I put a before and after picture from when Matt first started with me to the recent show. Kevin Jordan said, it would have been interesting to see what you would have done in the Nationals lineup this year with that conditioning. He said, with some legs, you might be in the mix. For people to come out of their way and say this shit, it's motivating. It gives me some hope because these people never said anything like that to me before. Mostly everybody told me I had a big mouth and I was dreaming and, you know, and to shut the fuck up. I didn't know what I was talking about. So, I think it's a possibility. I have a lot more work to do, and I've intensified my work, especially in my leg training, coming for the next year. But that is the ultimate goal. Past that, I haven't even considered. It's a whole different world than the IFBB game, where you have guys like John De La Rosa get beat up at some shows, and John's a very, very good bodybuilder.
Right.
He's probably one of I can't believe I didn't even mention him in terms of inspirational grinder, Roman Fritz. Roman Fritz was a skinny kid, and he built himself up to what he is now. He's a guy who walks around striding glutes in the off season, and that, the guy weighs his ketchup in the off season. He's nuts. But Roman hasn't really done much at the pro level either. So it's hard to say. It's also hard to say what I'll look like then, in 5 years, 10 years. Maybe I'll hit some kind of speed burst in my growth where before you know it, I'm a lot bigger than I was. I don't know. But my main finish line right here is the pro card. And I think that I do think that it's a possibility. It's not a guarantee, of course. I'm not one of those guys that people say, you will go pro one day, bro. One day will be your day. But I do think but don't count me out is what I'm saying.
No, I got you. Well, let me ask you this. I think we're all pretty familiar with your mentality and attitude at this point. A lot of people have a certain viewpoint when it comes to how many pro cards are given out nowadays, especially now that they're giving out second place pro cards at Nationals, obviously. Most people are not fans of that. Now, you're in a unique position, knowing that, you don't necessarily have the world's best lines, the world's best genetics. You're not Phil Heath. So, in a sense, however you earn that card, you put in your work and you earn that card. That's the reward. At the same time, what if you won your card by taking second place at Nationals? Would you take the pro card, and would it sit well with you, or would it always kind of eat at you a little bit, honestly?
To me, and I've thought about this many times, I would absolutely take the pro card, and then I could be going against everything that most people would predict me to stand for. I would absolutely take the card, one, because it's allowed. Two, because when you're at Nationals and it's top two, we all know that the classes are bigger. You might get 30 heavyweights in Nationals because they know it's top two, whereas you might get 17 heavyweights at the USA's because it's top one, you know, first place finisher. I understand the fact that you didn't win the show and you're going to get a pro card, but the same purists in the sport that when they switched it to class winners will get pro cards probably thought it was stupid when you didn't win the overall at the show.
Right. Now, that's a good point.
I think for me, if it's for me and knowing who I am and what I'm capable of, I may never be in that position ever again. You know what I mean? Sure. I may never be able to graduate with that to land in second place. That might be a career day for me, if I beat up on some people and end up in second place. And it would go a long way for in terms of a sense of accomplishment, as well as the status of, you know, to be able to tell my son that, you know, your dad is a pro bodybuilder, you know, against what everyone said and everything like that. So I would definitely take it. I know some people will look at it as like a punk out, but man, Brad Rowe got a pro card in second place, and he's done more than I think the guy in the first place ever did with it. You could do things with that, and it's the rule. I mean, they made it for a reason. That's like also to me saying, "Hey, I'm gonna get I got a pro card at the 35 and over at Team Universe."
Right.
Because, yeah, well, that's not the Open National. That's not Nationals. That's not USA. It's not North American. That's the old man category. You got it by default because you were just old enough and you hung around long enough. No, man, it's the fucking rules. You know, it's hard. People say, oh, top two, they're giving away pro cards. You fucking do it then. You know, those guys are inside the top 15. Top 15 is fucking nasty. You have to beat a lot of good guys to get even in top two. So I don't want to hear that shit, man. Like, but it might bother me just that I didn't win just because of the competitive aspect. But at the end of the day, I would still be happy. It bothers me that I didn't win the East Coast overall this year. I took first in my class, but and that was a great accomplishment, beating the eight guys that I did. But and I lost overall. That eats at me a little bit. It eats at me that I didn't win my class at the Easterns, but in reality, I put on a good performance, so it's like same shit, man. As long as you're eligible, I would take it. That was like a top five. That's freaking different if it ever got down to that.
Right. Well, in other words, it sounds like there's still some evaluation there where you're looking at realistically how hard does somebody really have to grind and what do they really have to bring in order to achieve that. Once they're just giving them out to fucking literally everybody, then it legitimately loses its value, but it's still in a position where it's super valuable. You really have to put in the work. You know, they ain't giving those pro cards out to someone that just got a gym membership and did their first cycle. You know, you got to put in your time and really rise up the ranks. So I can understand that completely and respect that. You mentioned your son there, so I got to throw this one at you. You know, do you find at times with dedicating as much time and energy as you do to the sport with prep and all that, does that ever leave you grumpy and drained? I'm sure it does, but how does it affect your home life and how you interact with your son? You ever have trouble just, you know, finding the time or the energy rather to go out for a walk with him, or, you know, does it weigh on you? Because for me personally, that was one of my deciding factors. I just hit a point where it didn't matter as much to me as it did kind of being able to be as present as I wanted to be at home, I guess is the best way to put it. And how do you deal with that?
Definitely. It's a great question. I have my wife sitting here right now, and the end of the prep was very tough, you know, for our whole family. She was trying to keep the house together. She was helping me. Our son's 2.5. I got to say, there's been certain times that my temper really shortened, and I had to walk out because, you know, he was just going through me like nails on a chalkboard. I understood from the outside looking in that if I was eating right now and I wasn't training 7 days a week, that I would probably be fine with this. I worked all day at the office, and then I would go to the gym. For most of the prep, I would get my son from his daycare, and then I would go. My wife would meet me at home. She'd take over. I'd eat my pre-workout meal, go to the meal, and my son would be sitting in his high chair eating dinner and say, "Daddy, go to the gym. Daddy at the gym." So he knew where I was.
Right.
And then he would go to sleep. And I wouldn't see. There were times that I had trouble getting out of the car to even just go get him in the daycare, because that was stressful, because the teachers would talk to me about nonsense. And I just wanted to get him home just so I could eat my meal, because I was starving. So I was just, we were holding on for dear life. And yeah. I remember, like, even when the show was coming, somebody said, "Hey, are you going to do Nationals after this?" I said, "Man, me and my family, we cannot diet another day."
Right.
I said, "I don't care about a punk." I said, "Nationals will be there next year." I said, "We can't diet another day. They're going to kill me more than, or I'm going to kill myself." But, you know, everything was like coming down, and it ended just at the right time.
Yeah.
And since then, it's been like a lot easier. On Halloween, I was 2 weeks out. My son went trick-or-treating. I went with him and my wife, and we went one loop around the block. Halfway through, I was like, "I got to go home. I'm struggling." It was agonizing just to walk around the block, because, you know, I was doing 45 minutes of cardio on the stairs at the time, and, you know, I was training, and, you know, training was very intense at the time, and it was just, I struggled. And so, yeah, it's like, it's good, but I also learned that when the prep's done, you stay on point, but you have to balance yourself.
Sure.
You know, that doesn't mean eat pizza every fucking meal and forget about the gym, because then you'll never be anything good, but it also means you got to give back a little bit, and you also got to relax and not stress your family out with as much bodybuilding shit. Don't talk about bodybuilding as much. Don't make the whole day about bodybuilding and stuff like that, especially if your family's the kind of family that supports your bodybuilding, but as well as they're not like bodybuilders themselves. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think it's really valuable for everyone to hear that. You know, if everybody looks at you as this, the greatest grinder, you know, nothing gets in your way, you have tunnel vision, you know, you leave no stones unturned in pursuit of a goal, and, you know, you're still trying to find your own balance with this stuff. At least for me, like, when I was deep in prep, I remember times explicitly looking at Nikki and just saying, you know, "Baby, I'm so sorry, just, like, 3 more weeks, I'll be back. Like, give me 3 weeks, just stand by me, put up with this bullshit." You know, and you start, it weighs on you, because we've hit this era with the social media wars and all this bullshit, where everybody is, you know, as beast mode as possible. And, you know, everybody gets up at 2 a.m. and goes to sleep at 1:30 a.m. and gets their cardio in. You know, you get the point. Like, no one struggles. No one has difficulties. And the reality is, like, if you got a family and you're trying to balance bodybuilding, good fucking luck. And that's hard, man. That's really hard to do. So with your son specifically, and I want to go in a little bit, Gary, I was kind of watching the home stretch of your prep this year. And again, as I mentioned, some of the posts you were putting up were just, you know, speaking to me, because they were right up my alley. Shit that I've said to clients year after year now, and I wish people on the street talked like this, because life would be a lot cooler. So I want to cover some of the things that you put up, you know, in the last couple of weeks leading up to prep. One of my favorites was a picture of your son watching a Jay Cutler training DVD, right? And you said on that post, "When he mistakes his dad as Mr. Olympia Jay Cutler, this is why we push harder each day. Always remember who's watching." If you wouldn't mind, how old is your son, and what message are you hoping that he someday takes away from your bodybuilding career? What values are you hoping that he can pull from this?
Yeah, so I put on a Jay Cutler video on YouTube one day after cardio, and my son came running out, and I don't know if he actually thought that he looked like me, but he saw the muscle. He sees me walk around with no shirt on, and he said, "Daddy, Daddy." And that was like, you know, the pinnacle of any father's, that's a bodybuilder's life right there, that your son is not knowingly associating you with one of the greatest bodybuilders ever. And, you know, that got me to push harder, that he's identifying that I'm something prominent, that he can recognize that I have big muscles. And, you know, that, and in terms of, the million-dollar question I get asked all the time is, do you want your son to bodybuild? My answer is no. And that's for obvious reasons. I do unspeakable things at times to get in shape and, you know, have big muscles and everything like that. And I would never want that. Nobody would want that for their kid if they had a choice. We just kind of find ourselves in that. My message to my son would be, to whatever you want to do, you're going to have to put in all the work. You're going to have to, you know, this whole topic, grind it out. And you're going to have to make no excuses when it gets tough, because it is going to get tough, whatever level you're at. And you're just going to have to keep going. You have to have self-belief and, you know, deal with naysayers and the doubters and everything like that. And, you know, and you don't quit. And the reason we always, I mentioned before, when my wife was giving birth at 6 weeks out, I was monitoring the progress as well as bouncing over to Retro Fitness to do my cardio, shower, and then I come back to the hospital, eat meals that were in there, would see how she was doing. If the labor wasn't progressing anymore, I would go do another round of cardio. This is when I was doing the triple hit. And most people would say, you're crazy. She's in the hospital. People would not have been mad if I said, I can't go do my cardio today when my wife's giving birth. I'd say it's a pretty good fucking reason, excuse to give. The reason why I did do it is so when my son is 16 years old and he doesn't feel like going to wrestling practice or any kind of practice, I said, when you were being born, I was doing cardio sessions around your birth just because it's what it was expected of me. That didn't even stop me. You're going to fucking practice. Stop being a pussy. I remember the clear day. I made the thought process to do that just so 15 years later when he was in high school or whatever, I had that lesson, in that card in the back of my pocket to deal him with when it came about, if it ever does come about. But in terms of bodybuilding, I'm not rooting for him to be a bodybuilder. Whatever he does, he's just going to have to go 110%. If he wants to be a ballerina, he's going to be the hardest working ballerina there ever was.
Yeah.
I just want to portray that through my body, because that's what I do, onto whatever he chooses that he wants to do.
Right. Well, it's interesting, you know, because, and I'm sure this statement is going to get demonized by certain listeners, but the topic of masculinity, femininity, what is to be a man, obviously that's getting all kinds of messed up and screwed around these days with what's going on in the world. But in a certain sense, in a more traditional sense of the term, it sounds like what you're hoping he walks away with is kind of what it is to be a man, meaning like it's not always fun and it's not always about doing what you feel like doing at the immediate moment. It's about, you know, putting in the work and doing what you got to do to get to that next spot that's more important. You know, going to work even when you don't feel like it and you're a little under the weather, going outside and you know, getting done what you got to get done, even if it's raining and it's, you know, not sunny and fucking fun outside. You just got to pull up your panties and get to work.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's, if you don't do it, I always say, if I do all the work, it might not happen for me. If I don't do the work, it's definitely not going to happen for me. So there's no choice with it. And if I don't do the work, I will look negatively on myself and right. Say, you know, you're better than that. And, you know.
So one of the other favorite ones that I saw that you posted up was a video of Matthew McConaughey giving his Oscar speech from this year. You know, a little quote, he said, there's a few things, about three things by my account that I need each day. One is something to look up to, another is something to look forward to, and another is someone to chase. And again, you know, I was pretty moved by that. I'm assuming you were as well. Gary, who do you look up to and why? What do you look forward to and why? And what are you chasing?
What do I look up to? I mean,
you're not allowed to quote people and then not actually believe what they say. Just so you know, you got. Meaning, well, is there someone out there?
I would say if I look up to Cutler just because he's where I want to be, or you know, in terms of his competition, and then thereafter, so he's. That's what drew me into it, is that he has everything that I want from a business and a competitive standpoint. So that's what drew me in terms of, you know, looking up to him. He was always in terms of bodybuilding inspiration. You know, he's still the one that the YouTube videos that I always watch, him and Branch Warren particularly. Branch is, you know, very similar to my mindset. In terms of looking forward, the way I interpret that would be, when I'm in a contest prep, right, the reason that I'm able to keep going forward is because I always know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I know that when I enter the contest prep that it's basically like a door closing behind me and it locks and I'm in a dark tunnel. There's a little light at the end and there's a lot of bad shit that's going to happen to me as I keep walking through that tunnel. But you got to keep going. You can't go back out the door that you came in. So there's no way to exit. For me, there's no way to exit a prep unless you injure yourself or you have a family emergency and you get sick, like really sick. But you have to keep pushing through, which means you have to deal with all the adversary that you get, including, and when I mean adversaries, it's just all the requirements that you have. The hunger, the getting up early to do cardio, the training when you have no energy, the irritability. You have to deal with all that, all that bad shit, and fight it until the end. And as you get closer to the show, as you get closer to that tunnel, the light gets a little bit bigger. That's why everybody has so much energy on the day before the show. I'm like running around crazy the day before the show, even though I'm on no cards, because I know that we're right here at the end. We're at it. We're at the show already, you know. So, but like 4 weeks out, it feels like there's no hope. But you always know that the contest prep's going to end at some point, so there's always something to look forward to, you know. And that's why I always kind of have a plan, in the sense of also in the off season. I know that what am I looking forward to now? I'm looking forward to the off season. I'm looking forward to making the necessary progress so that when I get into contest prep, I'm competitive at the next level. So what's next is basically what to look forward to. What was the third one?
What are you chasing? And I'm going to ask, what are you chasing both short-term and long-term? I mean, we've talked about a pro card, but there's a certain part of me that thinks that's not really what you're chasing.
Right. The pro card is a long-term goal. Pro card, and you could even go past that and say some sort of business venture that I don't know but involves the sport that doesn't involve competing. You know, not a supplement company, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Everyone's got some kind of business nowadays. I just haven't thought of it, otherwise I'd be doing it already. But something long-term that can be lucrative for me, that's the long-term goal. Short-term, would be to not only win the junior nationals next year, but do it in convincing manner, like actually make a statement. To me, junior nationals or not, every stage is like the Olympia when it comes to it. So why not bring the most brutal package that basically says to everybody, I'm not here to fuck around. So that's kind of what I'm chasing is that junior national title. I got 10th there. That was the first national show I did in 2013. And I'm coming back, and I hope to take the overall there. And I hope to do it in convincing fashion that it's no doubt that I should not be at the junior level anymore. And I should move up. That's my goal.
All right. Well, Gary, I'm going to hold you over the fire on this one. I'm not going to settle for that answer only because, let's say, next year they put out this new schedule and there is no junior nationals and there is no whatever, potato Idaho classic podunk show. So you got to be chasing something bigger. Would I be off base to say in a grander sense, you're chasing a fucking attitude?
An attitude? Yes. You're not out of line. One of my sayings, my catchphrases that I like to use is make a statement. And I felt that I did that this year, regardless of a second place finish and missing an overall. By bringing a certain level of conditioning and bringing a certain level of a certain look, a certain improvement that says that you are not the bitch physique that everyone once thought you were. You are not to be taken lightly, and you are here to mean business, and everyone's going to know it sooner or later. The old LeBron James, how he says, you're all witnesses. That is the attitude that I bring. You could call it arrogant, or people could call it arrogant, or whatever they say, but that's what my attitude is when I go into the gym. That's my attitude when I envision the stage, is that I don't want to win just slipping by. I want to do it in a convincing fashion and say, Jesus fucking Christ, this guy did not fuck around, and he told us so. You didn't listen.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I remember an old powerlifting video. It's from a powerlifting movie, and they're interviewing Eddie Cohn, great powerlifter, talking about Kurt Kowalski, another great powerlifter. Yeah. about how Kirk Kowalski was just fucking crazy. And Eddie Cohn made some statement like, you know, Kirk was the kind of guy where he came in to hit a 900-pound squat and he bombed. He didn't hit it. And the next lifter tried to hit a 920 squat and he bombed and he didn't hit it. Then Kowalski's mentality would be, fuck it, put 950 on the bar. And he'd say, Kurt, you didn't hit 900. He said, yeah, but if I miss with a bigger number than he missed with, I fucking win. You know, meaning like neither of them won, but I had the bigger balls. Like I was willing to go where you weren't willing to go, you know? And because of that, like, I don't care if you have the trophy. I walk out with being a bigger man than you, you know? And honestly, like when I watch all of your postings, that's the vibe that I get. Like, I don't think it matters if you turn pro. I don't think it matters if you take first place with straight first at Junior Nationals and every other show next year. If you cheated on your diet once, you're not going to hold your head up high, you know?
That's correct. That's 100% correct. It's just, it's a very personal and spiritual thing with me, which I think a lot of athletes miss out on. It's a very individual thing. I don't care who's going to be on stage. I don't care if I go to the show and I'm the only guy there.
Right. That's awesome to point out. Talk about that for a second. You're the only person out there still doing it. Why does it matter to you?
It's a personal battle. I don't want to use the term at work. I know people get mad about that and they take it literally, but it's like a personal struggle and battle that I'm at with myself. That can I torture myself anymore? Can I grind my conditioning out that much more? When I was getting ready for this show, I was literally trying to. I literally said I want to bring conditioning that nobody's ever seen before, and that wasn't just like some like off base thing. That's what I was trying to go for. I was literally looking at pictures of Andreas Munzer, going, "How do I do this?" And everyone was, "Gary, you got to be careful, man. That guy died for that." I'm like, I'm not saying that I'm going to mimic his conditioning. But I have to try. Yeah. By missing a meal, it's over.
Right.
It's completely over to do at that point.
Yeah.
You failed. To me, the bodybuilding show is what you do every day. That's your performance. Not the show itself. The show itself is a talent show.
That's a great way to look at it. And I think if everybody looked at it that way, they'd probably have a lot more fun with this whole lifestyle. So, you know, talking a little bit about the general disposition with bodybuilding these days, you know, most fans of hardcore bodybuilding, yourself, myself, seem to be in agreement that the sport's kind of gone down a progressively crummier path these last couple of years. Without trying to reinvent everything, what do you feel can or should be done to, quote unquote, make bodybuilding great again? You know, we're handing the reins over to you. What are we doing next year? What needs to be done?
This one might not be politically correct with the MPC.
Do it.
But if we're talking about making bodybuilding great again, not meaning let's make a lot of money, to make bodybuilding great again, we have to eliminate the men's physique and the classic physique division. We have to eliminate the bikini division. And I know like 90% of your money comes out at that point. I'm talking about just making it great again on a piece of paper. And go back to the fact that it does not, you cannot get on stage 2 years after training. That's what the men's physique division was created for. To get those guys that usually sat in the stand saying, if I just train for another 5 years, maybe I could be a bodybuilder. Now they don't have to. Now they just get on the stage. So it's making it worse. The physiques are worse. Less bodybuilders. And it's going, I don't want to say it's diluting it, but I'm saying that those guys that should be in the stands watching bodybuilding with hopes to get bigger in the gym so they can get on a bodybuilding stage are now on stage themselves.
Right.
So there's less bodybuilders. So nobody wants to work anymore. And that goes the same way with the bikini division, because those girls would have sat there and said, maybe in a few years I would do figure, you know, and so on and so forth. I think another thing that would make bodybuilding better, top two to qualify at a regional national qualifier get you qualification to junior nationals or junior USA, like the Canadians do, not to nationals, USAs, or North American. Once you place top five at junior nationals or junior USA, you now have a year qualification, or we could do 2 years, to do any pro qualifier. You got to go through the levels. just like how in Canada, you got to do your, whatever it is, like a local show and then qualify. Then you got to do your provincials, and then you could go to nationals.
Right.
And then they only give a pro card out to the overall winner, which is crazy. To turn pro Canada, there's some freaks walking around in Canada that don't have a pro card. And so I think that the way to step it up, I think too many people are getting qualified, which is fine, but they're jumping right to the USA. They're jumping right to nationals, and it's diluting those classes. Your top 10 are good, and then it really severely falls off because everyone says, I'm not going to the junior nationals because there's no pro card awarded. You're not at that level yet. If you're going to a pro qualifier with intent to win, you better look like a pro bodybuilder already. You better be ready to get on a pro stage within 6 months of your pro card. If you don't, then you should be at a junior level until then. Matt told me after this year, he said, for you to do well at nationals, you need to be able to convincingly win junior nationals.
Right.
Convincingly.
Well,
I just think that people are jumping the ship too much, and that would make it better, I think, if you did like a tier system kind of.
So without getting too far off the deep philosophical end, as I'm inclined to do, it almost sounds like, you know, the last couple of years, in an attempt to make bodybuilding quote unquote more popular or, you know, generate more fans or whatever, they introduced these new divisions that made it more inclusive, that made it so it was, you know, essentially easier to do, so more people could do it. Because we all know, like, the only people that actually go to shows are people who participate in shows and the family members of those people. So, you know, it seems like they made it more inclusive, but in so doing, they removed the greatness of it. They made it so that, you know, it was easy to get there, and you could get there with minimal effort, and you get there overnight, so on and so forth. You would agree with that?
Correct.
All right.
Correct. Yep.
Well, it's interesting, too, because nowadays the standards are higher than ever to be a top-tier pro. I mean, when you look at the size and conditioning, to be a true top guy, it's insane compared to 20 years ago. Just in terms of raw size, you know. But at the same time, they expect the life cycle to be like a fraction of what it used to be, meaning we find any 20-year-old who shows promise, and we start touting them as the next Mr. Olympia, and essentially let it be known that, like, hey, you have one good showing next time, or we forget about you. So the standards are higher than ever, but the window to get there is shorter than ever, and, you know, the system seems to be kind of short-circuiting. Like, it just ain't working. So let me ask you this. Go ahead.
What's that?
Go ahead.
I think that the focus in bodybuilding nowadays has become money and not pride of the sport. And that's not bad-mouthing anybody. I like money just as much as the next person does. But if I was a billionaire, just say somebody gave me a suitcase with a couple $1 billion, I'll never be able to spend it all my life. I can buy whatever the hell I want. And I bought the MPC, right? A lot of things would be different because I wouldn't care about losing money, but I have pride for the sport. It wouldn't be a business to me. It would just be a fun. I'm a fan. I'm a competitor. There's a lot of pride and prestige to it. So I just think that those two things have been more unbalanced now. You know, and I'm pretty vocal about it to even my friends who are men's physique and classic physique guys. You know what I mean? How many guys are doing the classic physique division nowadays that don't have classic physique? They just can make weight.
Right.
No, I agree. If I really wanted to, if I really tried, I think my height is like 198 now to make my height. If I really tried, I could lose some muscle and get in at 198. That does not mean that I have all of a sudden a classic physique. I don't have a classic physique. I have a wide waist. That's not going to be good for me. So that doesn't mean just because you're small that you should do classic physique. If you're big, you should do bodybuilding. You should fit where your body is right. And if your body is not right, as in you're not filled out enough for bodybuilding, then guess what? Time for a year off, time to go to the gym, time to take more shit, and time to just eat more. Right. And so it will take time. Not go to the easier, smaller division because you could get in there instantly. That's the whole societal thing right there is the instant gratification compared to nobody wants to work anymore.
No, I agree. So let me ask you this. Can you appreciate a competitor, you know, whether amateur or pro? Let's talk about some of the top-level pros. You know, you already mentioned Phil Heath. Can you appreciate a competitor who doesn't give it their all, or does that kind of color your view on the person? Meaning, Are you able to sit back and really dig Phil Heath as a bodybuilder? Or does that idea that this dude was just kind of, not that he doesn't work hard, he obviously does. I mean, everybody at this at the top level works hard, but there's degrees of working hard, right? Can you get into watching Phil Heath knowing that, you know, the dude showed up and pumped away on some machines and won 7 titles?
I respect his look. I respect Dexter's look. I think it's marvelous, you know, awesome. I think when they come out, it's freaking like jaw-dropping. But I don't identify with them. There's no connection mentally or spiritually is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. There's no
inspiration to me. I think spiritually is on the right path. What I was going to say is, how about emotionally? Meaning, like, when you watch, you know, some of Branch's old stuff, or maybe some of Cutler's old stuff, like, it lights you up. Can you get lit up?
I light up when Branch used to walk out on stage, because I'm like, that's somebody that is much better than me, but he's in, but I identify with him.
Right.
I don't identify with Dexter Jackson or Phil Heath. I identify with Jay Cutler, so in their ways, you know, it's you know, John Meadows. That's why these guys are my inspiration. These are the guys that I'm watching. It's not the Dexter. I think the Dexter looks great. I would never say Dexter looks like shit, but when Dexter walked on, won the Arnold, and Arnold prompted him with all the questions to see how hard he works for the show, and Dexter redirected. He said, "Did you do a lot of posing for the show? You know, to make sure that you were perfect at displaying your body." And Dexter goes, "No, not really." "But did you do a lot of ab work and cardio?" Dexter, "I didn't do any ab work or cardio." And you're like, you don't say that. There's a bunch of, there's a thousand people in the stands here who need to do cardio and abs to be anything significant. And then you're basically saying you got this and you did it easy. Regardless if you did do it easy, just play the game a little bit. You know what I mean? So I did not identify with that at all, even though I thought he was a clear winner.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, and this isn't anywhere on the questions I sent you, but I'm going to ask you, do you think bodybuilding should simply be selecting the physically best developed physique? Or do you think some of that other stuff should almost factor in? Meaning, you know, we've really turned bodybuilding into this thing where you're just looking at competitors under a microscope, seeing how many lines they got in their butt, seeing how big their arms are. You get the point. In a sense, it's kind of taken some of the soul out of it. Versus, you know, in Arnold's day, it was more about being epic. It was about presenting a certain persona on stage with your posing, with how you carried yourself and stood, you know, standing relaxed even, which they don't do these days a lot of the time. Do you think it should just come down, the sport, to the technically best developed physique? Or do you think, almost in the sense that Mr. Olympia or the top guys almost have a responsibility to be ambassadors, in a sense, I know that word gets thrown around a lot, but to try to breathe life into that next generation to keep it going and keep it alive?
I think that it should come down to the best physique on that day. I think that if you have other things going for you, say you're a good ambassador for the sport, you have a good fan base because you're a grinder, whatever it may be, that extra, that you know, could be bonus points, you will be rewarded outside of the stage for that. Meaning, your line will be big at your booth. You know, you'll be able to sign more deals with companies because of it. But in terms of the stage, I think that it should just be sport. And I would gladly lose a show if I wasn't the best person, even if I had, you know, the huge following because of everything that I'm doing outside of the, you know, being perfectly physique and, you know, finding it out and stuff like that. That's something that I have to do because of the parents that I was born with. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's just, I never use my faulty genetics as a crutch. I just identify it as a factor, and I know that I have to work twice as hard.
Well, it's not a crutch. It's a catapult, so to speak. Meaning, like, you didn't, you know, default onto your less than perfect genetics. Rather, you use your less than perfect genetics to accomplish more than was ever expected, which is the opposite.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is, I would never lose a show and say I lost because I had worse genetics than that guy. I don't make excuses like that.
Gotcha. That's a great point. So let me ask you this, and we're coming up on the better part of 2 hours, so I kind of want to close with this. We talked a little bit, you know, that Matthew McConaughey quote, what are you chasing both short term and long term? What do you look forward to and why? And we talked about, you know, you being a father and having a son and trying to pass on your values to him over time. This chip on your shoulder, you know, I'm a little familiar with it. I got one of my own. You grew up as a punk rock kid. I grew up as a heavy metal kid. A lot of similarities there. When you have that chip on your shoulder, and you kind of want to outwork every other person out there on the planet. Do you ever think what's going to happen if there comes a day when that chip starts to fall off your shoulder, when you just don't feel the need to prove that shit on quite that strong a level? How are you going to deal? First of all, do you ever see a day coming that's like that? What are you going to do then for motivation to keep grinding out? Or are you hoping to one day hit a point where that's not really in the forefront of your mind, where you went out and you proved what you had to prove, you accomplished what you had to accomplish, and now you're going to sit back and enjoy the ride?
Yeah, that's right. The chip on the shoulder definitely is my driving force. The me against the world, I'll prove my doubters wrong. That's absolutely my attitude, and that's just my driving force. To be honest, if that ever goes away, it might be time to consider retiring at that point and hanging it up. That might be my indication when I don't have that aggressiveness, that point to prove anybody wrong. Might be the time that it might be tough to call it quits. You have nothing left to prove. And do I hope that one day that happens? I do think so, because it will make me a more balanced person. I identify myself not as very balanced.
Sure.
So I'm not naive to that fact. I try my best, and I'm better than what I was, because I was very unbalanced in years past. But so I'm better when I'm doing it. But, you know, we're heading down to Atlantic City right now. I got the meals in the back. I have meals for tomorrow morning on Thanksgiving. I know that I have to take ice packs. I have to take shakers and with powders. And, you know, everything has to be prepared, because I can't just go down on a whim. When that time comes, there are days I'm like, can you imagine just being a normal person one time and just being able to go down on, you know, on a whim? And I'm like, how awesome would that be? I'm not there yet, but I hope that one day it does come, and one day when I'm, you know, I can just sit back and just relax with nothing to prove, no goals to, maybe different goals, but ones that don't involve freaking killing yourself in the gym.
Right.
And when I think if that chip on the shoulder goes, I'll know that it's time. I mean, like they always say, like in sports and stuff, when you'll know when it's time to retire, and you know, it'll be a hard decision, but you'll know. Like, how hard do you think it was for Derek Jeter to decide to finally hang up the cleats?
Right.
The guy's been a Yankee since he was 18 years old. I'm sure that decision didn't come easy.
Well, it's a super interesting. I don't know if you know this. A couple years back, they did a roundtable over at Muscular Development, where they interviewed, you know, Dorian, I think Sean Ray, and Kevin Lebroni, and it was, you know, a lot of really interesting questions that were kind of more along these lines, because, you know, my questions are so interesting. But they got to Lebroni, you know, they get to Sean Ray, and Sean has been very clear that he has no qualms whatsoever with retiring, with kind of getting out of shape. You know, still loving the sport and being a fan of the sport, but no longer being an active participant, you know. And then they got to Lebroni, and this was before he made his comeback. And it was interesting. Lebroni said, look, you know, bodybuilding was in my life during a time when I needed it, because I had this chip on my shoulder and I kind of needed something to put me into a positive place. And it helped do that for me. But now being older and having my children, like, I did what I set out to do. And I have none of that left, and I'm super happy. You know, I could never even imagine going back in and trying to make a run. And then sure enough, 2 years later, he's back in the gym, you know, making his run. It's an interesting topic to me, just because I think some people just aren't built to not have that chip on their shoulder. Like, they have a really hard time the minute they try, quote unquote, being normal or being laid back. It screws them up worse, you know, because that's just not how they're built. And I didn't have an answer that I was looking for from you either way. I just kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on the subject. But I don't know, man. I have a feeling I might be seeing these hashtags from you for years to come.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to see. But, you know, like I said, right now, that definitely is what keeps me going. That's what keeps the aggression, you know, and the controlled insanity to keep going and stay on point.
I hear you. All right, Gary. So why don't you tell all the listeners, you know, you might not even know yet. I don't know if you had a chance to talk it over with Matt extensively or with your wife. But if you have any idea what's coming up for you in 2018 and how listeners can get a hold of you if they need to.
Yeah, so we're going to be tentatively the Junior Nationals. I haven't discussed it with Matt, but I don't think that he'll have an issue with it. So that'll be in June. I don't believe they released the official date, but I think it's like around June 16th or something like that. If you want to contact me, Instagram is the_real_G6. That's G-S-I-X. And on Facebook is Gary Turner. So just search Gary Turner. There's going to be about a billion of them. And I'm the one with the bodybuilding picture on. So that's what he's. I don't have Twitter. I don't like Twitter for some reason. Facebook and Instagram are good.
I think the biggest letdown is, all I have to say is I hope that you keep those posts coming for a while yet, because they're not only amusing, for what it's worth, they actually light me up quite a bit and make me remember what it felt like to have huge chips on the shoulder. Now I try to keep it a little bit smaller and a little bit quieter, but, it's absolutely wonderful to see that you're out there spinning it for real and telling it like it is, because, you know, bottom line, the sport needs people that are doing that, but doing it in a way that's authentic and not done just for drama. And I don't think when you're doing it, it's drama or any of that bullshit. You're just, you know, spitting hot truth. And the world needs quite a bit of that right now. So, Gary, I want to thank you again for your time, for coming on. And I hope you have
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Have an excellent weekend. Go take care of your wife. Go party big with your protein shakes and your packed chicken. I'm sure it'll be blessed. And we will be talking to you here soon, and we'll be back in a minute with Beyond Driven Radio.
Voices Radio Network.